Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, welcome to Horror Versus Reality. I am Anna. This is Morgan.
I am Morgan.
And we are back. So today's episode is Amok from 2017 versus Christian Bala. This Polish piece of shit. I'm not being racist. He is from Poland. Yeah.
He's just a piece of shit.
He is a piece of shit.
Polish or not. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Polish or not, he's a piece of shit. He is a self-serving asshole, and you'll hear all about it throughout how he's portrayed in the film and how he is in reality. Both are assholes, self-serving assholes.
Yeah, very arrogant.
Yeah, very thinks they're the smartest person in the room, but they're definitely not.
Yeah, like sociopath on a level of 4 out of 10.
Yeah. You know that guy in your college philosophy class?
Oh my God, that was my ex-boyfriend. Seriously.
Yeah, he is that guy, the one who speaks up and has arguments with the professor a lot.
Oh yeah, that was him.
Yeah, he's that guy. It's also one of my friend, my dear friends, who's still very much one of my close friends.
Oh man, well if he's listening, he knows. And if my ex is listening, you know who you are.
Georgie, you're not a sociopath, but you did enjoy a rousing conversation with our professor, and that's fine.
I'm not gonna name my ex because I don't want to put that shit on blast, but you know who you are,
right? But I mean, yeah, Georgie and I are still great friends. I don't see him, he lives in Canada, but
hi Georgie.
Hi Georgie. Love you, dude. Yeah, good guy. Anyway. Yeah.
You just compared him to the, like, worst murderer.
I did not. All I was saying is that he is also the guy who has, like, arguments with the philosophy professor. But not, he wasn't, all right. Some people may have thought he was an asshole, but he's not. He is a very sweet fellow. Yeah, anyway.
Well, my ex is an asshole.
That, I don't know which one you're talking about, but I believe you. I've met
you know. We played, I'll just share a little story just to get off track, as usual. So whenever he was breaking up with me, we were breaking up, we played a lot of StarCraft, and he was saying that, you know, you're just a Zerg. And he was like, you're a Zerg. You're down in the dirt. You're in with nature. You know, you're just natural. And I'm Protoss. I'm from outer space. I'm an intelligent species and race. But really, when we look at each other, we're both just Terran. Terran being like the humans on the game. And I'm like, okay, get your shit. Get out of here. Go to Florida.
Okay. Yeah. Fuck him. I do know exactly.
Yeah,
also,
you know
I
that
definitely
guy.
Know exactly who you're talking about.
Yes.
also, I love that it was StarCraft, because we, Mark and I, were just talking about StarCraft earlier.
Yeah, no, I fucking love that game, but it's like the funniest thing. I could never forget it. Like, we were sitting in his room and we were like breaking up and just kind of, you know, trying to be cordial with each other, and he said that shit and I'm like, yeah, you're fucking Protoss, you're out in the clouds, man.
That is the most arrogant, stupid thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they think that when they think that they're being erudite. That's amazing. Okay, we're gonna get back on track, guys. I swear.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna start talking about the film. As usual, you know, I start talking about the directors and actors first, and as per usual, because there's only a few that have enough notable stuff to talk about, I'm only going to highlight the main characters, the main actors who play the main characters. Yeah, or we'd be here all day. And nobody has time for that, right, guys? No. Okay.
I ain't got time for that.
No. All right, so the director's name is Kasia Adamek. By the way, we may butcher names again, because the Polish language is hard, y'all.
Yeah, that's a really difficult language.
It is. It's very guttural and not in the way that English is.
Yeah, it's like I feel like it's a mix of like German and Russian.
That's what I was thinking. Exactly, yeah. What I was thinking. Okay. Yeah. So, she's the daughter of the Polish film director Agnieszka Holland and Slovak opera director Lako Adamek. Her aunt is film director Magdalena Lazarkiewicz.
Perfect.
Yeah, we're gonna go with that. She has worked on a variety of films as a storyboard artist, including Everything is Illuminated with Elijah Wood, which is such a great book and film. The terrible Halle Berry Catwoman film. The Stephen King adaptation Hearts in Atlantis that stars Anthony Hopkins. And, drumroll please, Battlefield Earth. Yeah, she worked on what is widely considered one of the worst films ever made. John Travolta plays an alien, and it was written by L. Ron Hubbard, the creator of Scientology.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
It is the worst movie. It's the worst.
I've only heard bad things. I've never had a desire to.
Yeah, it's like, it's so bad that it's cringy and you like have to turn it off. I suffered through it and was like, this is fucking terrible. It's terrible.
Oh, man.
It's very cringy.
Yeah, yeah. I think the only reason that John Travolta is still in Scientology is because they've got dirt on him.
And oh, yeah.
And they won't let him leave.
I'm not going to say he diddles kids, but...
No, I think he's gay.
Oh, he's definitely gay.
Him and Kelly Preston just got divorced.
It's totally okay to be gay. Just come out.
Stop being... Come on, John.
Stop closeting yourself.
We've seen Saturday Night Fever. It's okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm gonna stop spreading slander about Travolta.
Yeah, no, we're you know, poking fun. Yeah,
man. Yeah. Okay, so the actors, Mateusz Kazuskiewicz, sure, has Christian Bala. In 2010, he received the Karlovy Vary Film Festival Award for Best Actor with Filip Garbacz for the role in Paweł Sala's film Matka Teresa od Kato.
Perfect.
Yeah. In the same year, he won the Zbigniew Cybulski Award. That's a Polish annual film award given to the best young actors. It was established in 1969 on the initiative of Wiesława Kapinska, and named to commemorate Zbigniew Szybulski, who is widely considered as one of the greatest Polish actors of the second half of the 20th century.
Mm. Damn.
Yes. Yes.
That was Christian Bale, right? The one.
Yeah, well, okay, so he won that award. I was just explaining the award.
No, I'm just saying that's the dude you're talking about, because the name was just really...
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about the actor who plays Christian Bale, yes.
Okay. Okay.
In 2011, he received an Eagle in the category Discovery of the Year for the role in All That I Love. He was also nominated in category Best Actor. Eagles are the Polish equivalent of the American Academy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 2013, Mateusz was named one of the 10 most promising acting talents in Europe in EFP's Shooting Star 2014 Showcase. He has also been married to director Małgorzata Sumowska since 2011. They have one daughter named Elena, spelled differently than my middle name, born on the 3rd of December in 2012. And in January 2020, in the film Informer, he landed his first Hollywood role playing Stasek. Although he plays a Polish gangster, so he's not portraying any American characters yet. The Informer stars Rosamund Pike, who played Amy in Gone Girl, and Clive Owen, who has been in a bunch of different films, such as Sin City, Closer, Children of Men. If you haven't seen any of those, Google them, or we will be here all night.
Hey, I've seen that movie, The Informer.
You have?
Yeah.
That came out, like, last January?
Yeah, it was, like, I thought it was, like, 2 years ago.
It says it came out January 2020. Oh. I guess it's getting close to 2 years.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah, I've seen it. It's okay. It's good.
All right. Well, he's in that movie.
I did not even notice.
Well, I mean, he probably looks different.
Yeah.
It's the difference of, well, it's only the difference of like 3 years, but I don't know what he looks like in the film. Okay, so.
They also have a dog named Boris.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just saw that on IMDb.
So, Zofia Wyczklas, or Wyczklas, something like that, plays Zosia, Christian Bale's wife in the film. She's a Polish actress, of course. She's appeared in films such as After Image and Warsaw 44, and television programs such as Amazon's The Romanoffs and the BBC... PBS war drama. World on Fire.
Oh.
Yes. Then we have Lukasz Semlot as Detective Jacek Sokolski. He has appeared in more than 60 films and television shows since 2000. And as far as I know, they've all been Polish productions. He's not done American or British anything, really, or Canadian.
Oh.
Or Australian, or anything English is what I'm getting at. It's easier for me to see English language things.
Yeah, some United States of Love is not in English.
Yeah. No.
I was confused.
So let's dig into the movie, Morgan. Are you
ready? Okay.
Okay. So, the opening scene, we meet Christian, who is lovingly looking at this naked woman, and they are lightly talking and touching, and then Christian gets rope. It looks more like a bungee cord, but whatever. And he puts it around the woman's neck, and she jokes with him cautiously, but is into it until he ties her feet and hands and starts stroking her with a knife. It looks like a Japanese cooking knife of some variety. She begs to be let go, but he plunges the knife into her breast instead.
God, that scene. I was just like, oh, my titty.
Right? But also, all I could look at is how incredibly fake it looked.
Like, yeah.
Some
yeah,
really bad practical effects.
Like when it zoomed out, I was like, oh, he's gonna stab her. I know he is, because yeah. You could see like the clay.
Yeah, it was bad, guys. It was bad.
Oh, but he cuts it off. Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. While all this is going on, there's a kid watching a news report about a body that has been found. The child is Christian's, and his wife, Zosia, summons him by saying, let's go get daddy for dinner, before ascending the stairs to retrieve him. So, wife is on the other side of the door, knocking for Christian to come to dinner, but he's not answering the door because he is too busy killing this poor woman. Now, Zosia starts to open the door to see what Christian is up to, but he yells, stay out, and slams it in her face, and replies that he needs 5 more minutes. Resigned to her fate, she retreats downstairs. He turns around behind the closed door to reveal that he was only writing these terrible things. He has not murdered this woman. There is no woman. So he writes a little more, and then it reveals on the computer screen that the title is Amok, just like the movie. The next scene is a close-up of cherry pie. It looks tasty, but it's also a rather deliberate dessert choice by the filmmakers. It's fleshy with red fruit inside, you know what I mean? And they're cutting into it.
Oh, yeah. It just goes... Yeah. I was like, ugh. It made me think of the booby.
Well, that's the thing. They transition from the boob... They transition from that to this really quickly.
Yeah.
Scene in between. And it's very deliberate.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so the whole family is sitting down having dinner. This includes Christian's parents, whom they live with. His father nags him about not knowing what he is writing about, and Christian lies that he is writing about an intellectual in Paris. The father dismisses this as something that nobody would read and exclaims that he has a wife and child to support. The following day, Christian, his wife, and their toddler son, Chris, are walking along the beach. Zosia complains that she's tired and she wants to go home to put Chris to bed. Christian pulls her close and points to a spot in the water, indicating that that is where the previously mentioned body was found.
Yeah, he grabs her fucking face. He's like, look at it!
Yeah, it's like, aw, calm down, bro.
Hey, whoa. Dude, you're really into this.
You're really intense, man. Some really intense energy coming off of you.
Whoa, quit harshing my mellow.
Yeah. She's like, that's sick, and storms off. And he just like grins really happily. It's really ghoulish. Next, Christian is in a philosophy lecture, and he is too busy highlighting something about the murder in a newspaper to pay any attention to his professor, who is trying to get his attention. And he's talking about Nietzsche, by the way, the professor is. And the professor calls Christian out for not listening, but Christian happens to be quite well-versed on Nietzsche, as we will see later in the movie. Back to the family home. Young Chris is caught trying to go into his family's room and begins to cry when he is scolded by his mother, his father's room. She tells him that he isn't allowed in daddy's room and reminds him how easy it is to upset daddy. The child cries and says that he wants to see the pictures, but she isn't sure what he's referring to. So she sits him in front of the TV and curiously creeps back up upstairs to peek into the room. The door's locked, but she picks it with a bobby pin from her hair and finds the room's walls to be covered in crime scene photos and, like, stuff about the case. And she's really shocked and starts breathing really shallowly and freaking out. And then cut to 4 years later. We hear a phone call to the police about the murder of Maurice Brazuski, the murdered fellow from earlier. The voice tells the police that they know who killed him. He wrote a book about it, and all the clues to solve the murder are in the book. It's called Amok. The tip line clerk brings the murder tip to someone in the back to get it to the new inspector, Sokolsky. So the inspector goes up to the cold case files to compare facts from the case to the details of the book. And soon, he employs several other cops to comb through the novel to find leads. One in particular, one scene in particular is pretty fun when the cops complain, why not get a literary critic or something? We're not cops. This isn't some Dead Poet Society. Oh, Captain, my Captain. that's a great movie.
Yeah.
So he also reaches out to Christian himself to help with the investigation. He already strongly suspects that Christian is the murderer, but hopes he can get some more information out of him. And he does at first. Christian tells him that whoever killed Rozewski had intimate knowledge of the police handbook on subduing and arresting. Sokolsky realizes that a page in the police manual shows the hogtie method that the killer used to a T. Later on, whilst in the car, Sokolsky reveals to Christian that his daughter was killed in a car crash because his wife was overtired, but Sokolsky was too drunk to drive them home. Christian then reveals that he knows the police suspect him of the murder and asks the inspector if he feels responsible for his daughter's death. And he reacts poorly to this. Christian's kicked out of the vehicle in the rain. He pushes him up against the car, calls him a scumbag. And in that exact moment, staring him in the face, Christian, with a big smile on his face, is like, you know that scene in my book where the killer takes off his gloves? Well, my gloves are off. I confess. I am the one who killed Rozewski. And he's just grinning ear to ear, just thrilled at himself.
Yeah.
It's pretty chilling, honestly.
Yeah, it's and he's like one tear streaming down his face. Or it's rain. I don't know.
I think it's rain because his face is covered in rain.
Yeah. It's like really intense.
Yeah. So Christian is arrested and taken to an interrogation room, but the police chief tells Sokolowski that he will have to let Christian go as the book is not sufficient evidence to get a conviction. And in a very weird power play, Christian eats the paper he is given in the interrogation room to confess on.
Yeah, that was weird.
He eats
the shit out of that paper.
He does. He eats
it's
it like
a big piece of paper.
It is.
It's like a legal print.
Yeah, and it's ripped into like three pieces and he just shoves it in there like it's a fucking Big Mac. It's amazing. Yeah. So after this, Christian goes on a publicity tour hawking his book, but more importantly, proclaiming his innocence. Meanwhile, Christian's ex-wife, Zosia, is called to their son's school for his behavior. He wrote, "Go to hell, you stupid cunt," on the back of his homework. His mother tells the teacher that he's only 7 years old, and she kind of drags him off and they leave angrily. Upon arriving home, they find a copy of a muck left for them with the inscription, "To my first fans. Love, KB." The nerve of this fucker.
Yeah. He's just like, read my book. read my book.
He's so fucking desperate. He reeks of desperation.
Here, you six-year-old kid.
Yeah. like me.
Tell your mom I'm cool.
Yeah, basically. He also continues his reign in the spotlight having a book reading, and he delights and smiles as he reads the most shitty in style and character writing you've ever heard. His smile drops as he notices his wife in the audience and she leaves clearly disgusted. Back at home, she holds a knife and quivers as someone pushes a slip of paper under the door, and it's a police card with a muck written on it. Down at the police station, Sokolsky describes the book as pure evil and says everyone should stay away from it in response to Christian's ex-wife's refusal to read it. Here we discover that Sokolsky didn't come to speak to her about it and slip the piece of paper under the door at all. It was Christian, in fact, who left the business card. Startled by this discovery, Zosia rushes off to go check on her son, and Inspector is angered by her reluctance, and he goes off to see Christian's parents in hopes that they may know something or be able to shed light on the crime. the father, like, basically gets vodka out, or it's made with cherries or something, but they call it vodka in the subtitles. You know what I'm talking about, Morgan?
Yeah, the it's actually sour cherry, like, schnapps. I can't remember. The real name of it is Wisniak or Wisniak. It's Polish sweet cherry liqueur.
Yeah, so they're knocking these back. Like, our inspector has a drinking problem, and he is not refusing these.
Yeah, a lot of the Eastern European countries, they ferment their fruit for, like, schnapps or brandy type drinks.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Those
it's good. So fucking good.
Yeah, those are
I've good. Had this.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I couldn't remember the name of it. It's good.
Excellent.
It's really fucking strong, so I don't know how they were knocking them back like that.
Well, they're Polish.
Yeah, you could see them, like, the setup in the background. Like, I have a family member that used to do that, and the whole house would stink. Those big jars. Those big glass-looking jars with the hoses coming out of it, and he's, like, making his own liquor.
So it probably stunk in there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He starts talking to Mr. Bala about Christian's book. He learns that Christian described the book like this. It's like an onion. You have to peel back the layers to understand it. Yes, Christian Bala described his self-serving circle jerk murder book in the same way that Shrek describes ogres. Mr. Bala tells Sokolsky that Christian is good with fixing things, computers and telephones mostly, and that he would fix broken ones and then sell them for money. This sparks something in the detective's mind, and he hurries off. Back in his car, he rings up a fellow detective to look into Mr. Bala's Allegro account, because Christian has been using his father's account during the time he was writing his book. Allegro is basically Poland's eBay. For anyone who isn't Polish, and judging by our analytics, that's 99% of our audience.
Yeah, I had no idea what it was, and I mean, I figured it out after watching the movie. But
sure. But shout out to our one Polish listener.
We have one.
We love you. Yeah.
We love you and your liquor.
Yes. So, while still on the phone with his colleague, Sokolowski. Oh my God. Sokolsky. Jesus, Mary. Okay. Sokolsky arrives at his home and he, like, cat like creeps into his own home with his gun drawn. And he hangs up the phone, like, on his colleague. And he pushes his bedroom door open enough to catch his wife and an unnamed lover going to Pound Town.
Oh, fuck yeah. It's like really hardcore doggy style sex.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I phrase it like this because they're going at it doggy style, hard and fast.
And she's wearing pretty cool lingerie.
She is. This is not lovemaking. This is fucking.
This is hardcore fucking.
Yes. He looks away in disgust and then he shoots and he drives off in a hurry just as the cops are on the way to the house. He stopped off at a roadside diner. The inspector has a beer and checks into a motel for the night. It's here we learn that he didn't kill his ex-wife or the lover. He just kind of shot at them or off in the house. And we discover through this, through an angry and horribly toxic phone call between him and his wife. He calls her a slut and a cunt several times and tells her that he was this close to killing her and her fuck toy. She reacts so rather calmly to all this. It's my house, too. I didn't know you were going to be there. You know, needless to say, the separation is not going great. The last time a guy talked to me like that, he nearly got his nose broken. Not by me. I'm a pacifist.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. It wasn't you.
No. Yeah. My point is, nobody should take that lying down, and she's just so zen about it. He tells her to leave the house and to never come back, and she replies, "You need to stop living in the past."
I know, that was like, ooh.
Yeah, stop blaming yourself. You deserve to be happy, too. And he fucking throws the phone in response, breaks a glass of booze, and just pitches a fit, basically, and isn't having a good time.
Yeah. It's like a classic drunk murder detective.
Yeah. Yeah. totally. Your cliche.
I mean, I was expecting like a scene where he gets his gun and just starts tapping his forehead and it's like a shadow cast from like a low shot.
like when Brad Pitt starts unraveling towards the end of Seven.
Yes. Nice. Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Okay, so now we see a close-up shot of a door in a shabby building with the words, "Abandon all hope, those who enter here." Famously, these words are written over the archway to hell in Dante's Inferno, in case you didn't know. Inside, we see a bunch of hedonistic partiers doing drugs, dressed provocatively, and then here's Christian. He appears to be trying to acquire pills from one of the guys at the party, and he's agitated that they don't seem to have the exact pill that he's looking for. He looks over to sees a woman convulsing on the floor. One of the guys yell over to her, "Hey!
Don't die here!"
Well, I was going to say, before looking around and asking what she took. And then the other guy says, "Mephedrone, I think." So mephedrone is a stimulant classed among new psychoactive substances, a range of drugs that have been designed to produce effects similar to those of established illegal illicit drugs. In this case, it mimics cocaine most closely. And then they turn back to that first girl who's convulsing on the floor. And the guy goes, "Hey, wait until you get home. Don't die here."
Yeah. I was like, okay, that's sweet. Very classy party.
Yeah, right. But you know what it made me think of? It made me think of when John Travolta's character takes Uma Thurman's character to the old dude's house.
Oh yeah, he's like, "Why'd you bring this like dead bitch here?
Why would you bring her here? She can't die here.
Die in my living room, man."
Yeah. It made me think of Pulp Fiction, absolutely. Because it's people in the drug world. They're like, "Look, she's just another junkie. They can't die here, man. I can't have a dead body in my apartment. Get out." That is really how they roll, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, so Christian looks over, and one of the guys goes, Is she dead? And Christian says, "She's alive. She's shaking." They laugh. "Listen to Christian. He knows what a dead body looks like." It's unclear if they're just joking with him about the controversy around his book or if they're people that actually know he's a murderer. But I'm leaning towards the former, not the latter. Then this sloppy, strung-out girl recognizes Christian from TV and takes him to the bathroom for sex.
Yeah, and he is fucked up at this point.
Yeah,
Me feel like I was on drugs.
Yeah, right? He's fucked up, she's fucked up. She asks him if he will choke her, and he starts to imagine that she is his ex-wife. He begins to choke her as she asks, "Hurt me. Kill me." Yeah. And then he snaps back to reality, and he hears that cops are, like, breaking into the party. So he beelines it out of the bathroom, upstairs past a bunch of dancing people, warns the two pill heads from earlier, and jumps out the window to a lower-story balcony. He smiles as he hears his friends yelling about not wanting to go to jail for possession. "My buddy Robot got 25 years for possession, man."
Yeah, they kept saying that.
They did. Well, I mean, that's drug addicts for you.
Yeah, like, kept screaming it.
Yeah. So the pillheads are whining about the lack of a fire escape and being afraid of heights. while Christiane is standing on the edge of the balcony, and they are at least 5 stories up, probably higher.
I think they're higher than that, because the building across, I could count, I think it was like 12. I can't remember.
I knew it was at least 5, and I didn't feel like counting, so.
Yeah, the...
He's high up.
Yeah, they're really fucking high.
Yeah, it's high. So he pulls his phone out and texts Zosia, "The living being is only a species of the dead."
It's so fucking stupid.
And it's a quote by Nietzsche.
It's still stupid.
No, I know, but remember, he loves Nietzsche. He worships Nietzsche.
I'm a philosopher. God is dead.
He's such a nerd. And not in a good way, like the negative term of that word.
Yeah, he's like, I read 3 philosophy books, so I'm a philosopher.
Again, we all know this guy.
Yeah, the postmodern philosopher.
Who works at Starbucks and is never going anywhere, Tommy.
And plays bass in bands until he gets kicked out because he's a little bitch.
He plays bass in a ska band. Yeah. I'm calling out somebody there, probably. Somebody feels so seen.
Somebody feels hurt right now.
Yeah.
He called me a bitch.
Yeah. He then turns around and sees the cops and a bunch of partiers staring at him from the windows.
I like how they're saying jump. There's like a few people who are like, jump, do it.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. A bunch of them are going, jump, and like laughing at him. And then he starts laughing and he's just totally lost touch with reality.
Yeah. He's tripping face.
Yeah, he's tripping balls. So he bursts into his attorney's office the next day declaring that he will take a polygraph. Admitting that he was the one who called the tip-in about his book in the beginning of the film because his book sales were low, and he had to do something. He also tells his lawyer that he lied about Sokolsky kidnapping him at one point and torturing him, all just for attention. So now Christiane is being polygraphed, and he's doing a breathing technique that we see represented as him floating in water. And this floats over to an underwater car, and the inspector's daughter is screaming inside. And then Sokolsky startles awake to water leaking down on him from the ceiling. It's a pretty good transition.
Yeah, it is. I liked it.
Yeah. And then the inspector gets a phone call from his colleague informing him that Christiane has just finished taking the polygraph, and they are waiting for the results. Naturally, he rushes down there.
Before that, he vomits everywhere.
He does that. So naturally, he books it down there. Christiane has passed the polygraph. And the only real evidence that they have is that Christiane sold an Nokia on Allegro that happens to be the same model that the victim owned that was never found by the cops. Unfortunately, it's not enough to charge him. Christiane is released, and the police chief tells Sokolsky that their little book club is over. Cut to a visibly sleep-deprived inspector driving to the middle of nowhere, smoking a cigarette. He stops and opens the trunk to reveal that he has kidnapped Christiane, and he has rope. He pushes Christiane toward a river, and he hogties Christiane, just like he did to his victim. Our inspector pushes his head down under the water, and then brings him up like a waterboarding technique, sort of, and says, "They'll never believe that I kidnapped and tortured you twice. You fucked up." They're both so unhinged at this point.
Yeah.
But the detective then starts remembering his daughter drowning, and he pulls Christiane out and resuscitates him. Zosia leaves a voicemail for Sokolsky about Christian's creepy text message and asks him to come over. So later at Zosia's, Sokolsky tells her that quoting Nietzsche is unfortunately not a crime. And while at Zosia's, he like walks over to her, and on the counter, he's like, "Oh, where'd you get that knife?" Because it's a distinctive sushi knife, not unlike the one mentioned in A Muck. She tells him that she got it for cooking school, for sushi specifically. Then the detective, like I said, he's really sleep deprived. While she goes to feed her son, he passes out in the chair, like with a lit cigarette. she picks up a cigarette and kind of starts smoking it, and then like a little bit of time has passed and he wakes up to see her basically changing clothes in front of him, and she's like flirting. She's like,
hardcore.
Oh yeah, she's like, I've always liked older men.
She's thirsty.
She's real thirsty. And it's this weird blend of giving him helpful information and sexual energy, and it's wildly inappropriate. But our inspector has been off the rails for a while now, and they fuck on a table.
It's a good fuck.
It's a good fuck, yeah. They seem happy with it. The camera,
not the kid in the corner.
I was about to say, the camera pans to young Chris watching them. And then the camera pans to the TV, and now we're in the future, and we're watching Christian's trial. And another transition to Christian in jail getting a letter from Sokolsky saying that he is looking forward to his next book. That's it. They just kind of wrapped it up real fast at the end there.
Yeah, the scene with the kid, though, I felt so fucking bad. He's like just watching his mom get railed by this old cop.
Yes. And like, I mean, the kid's already clearly going through some shit from his father, you know?
Yeah.
This poor kid is going to grow up to be like his dad, probably.
Yeah, just at least take it to the bedroom or, like, wait till the kid's gone. Make sure he's not in the house if you're going to get railed.
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of that scene in Orphan where they just start banging in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah. God. And
what the fuck, guys? Don't just bang. Like, if you have children, don't just start passionately banging in the kitchen if your kids are home.
Especially, like, kinky, like, hardcore stuff.
Like, I promise, having been a child that just walked in on my parents, it's like we have a sixth sense about it. We don't know that we're going to, you know, have our eyes burning forever. I just know that we should go towards this room in the house. You can hide nothing from your children.
Yeah, seriously. They find
you. No. So I think we're going to take a quick break. And then Morgan's going to tell us about this piece of shit's real life.
Oh, God. He's such a piece of poop.
He is.
Ugh. I'm so glad we're going to get it over with because I've been reading too much on this dude, but.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Me too. I'm so sick of Christian Bala.
Yeah, me too. So listen to us after the break.
Yes.
Bye.
Hi. We're back. Morgan, let's do it.
Aha. We're back. And we're talking about the real life killer. Christian Bala, also known as the Novel Killer, as they call him. Haha, get it? Like novel killer. Yeah, stupid. He really was an asshole, like the movie portrayed. He really was it and is still that type of person since he's still alive. He is still in prison. I guess he should be able to be released at some point because he did get 25 years in prison. And I, like we were talking off before we started recording, I'd say the movie is pretty accurate, but like you said, they Hollywooded it.
They did. They Hollywooded it on up.
Yes.
Can I just say something about the last scene, the last couple of scenes in the movie?
Yeah, go ahead.
So the big fuck scene with the wife and the detective.
Yeah.
I thought of this earlier when I was high. But, you know, if he wanted to, he could rub it in Christian's face like, haha, I fucked your wife. I found a knife. Now you're getting 25 to life. Woo! Thank you, drugs.
I hope he did that.
Me too.
But in my research, I do not believe that the detective fucked his wife.
No, I highly doubt that.
Yeah, no. I do believe that he really did have a wife. And like we said, I think a lot of this backstory of the daughter was false. Couldn't find anything on it because I'm pretty sure it's false that.
Well, it's also not relevant to the case, really.
Yeah, too. Yeah. But he is interviewed a lot. I watched a documentary on this case, and he has been in two or three made for TV shows. There's Dark Crimes is one, and the other one is Killers Behind the Myth. And they're both about Christian Bala.
I watched the Killers Behind the Myth one.
Yeah, yeah. It is Jacek Roblewski is the, that was his real name. And like I said in the movie too, a lot of the names are changed. I think that's like a Polish law.
Name was the same.
Yeah, and a lot of the Polish, like, interviews and stuff, a lot of people's faces are blurred out, even the accused. So
yeah, it's like a privacy law.
Yeah, it's a privacy law that, well, I mean, in the United States, we don't have that. We put everybody on blast.
We do. We love to do that.
Yeah, even fucking victims that are still alive and, like,
awful about this, what we do in America, is that, you know, somebody will get accused of something and they'll end up not even being the killer, but then their life's ruined
because people
think that they're a killer or something.
Yeah. Don't even get me started on the Reddit and the Boston bomber. That was.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a tangent for another day, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll start out with the murder. We'll do it a little bit different this time. So just like the movie, like with the scene where he's floating through the river, I don't think he floated through the city like that first scene shows.
Yeah. With
that body like floating in the under the water and like coming up and
No, I think that was artistic licensing.
Yeah. The actual crime, the body was found, in the water. Okay. So like that scene at the beginning, that didn't happen. Darius, I'm going to butcher the names. I'm sorry. Darius Janinowski. He was the victim of Christian Bala. He was a 35-year-old advertising company director. He was married, no kids. He was pretty young and successful. The movie portrays him as an older businessman. But he was a well-liked guy. He played in a rock band on the weekends. He made music, and he was like a well-liked guy by all of his friends and coworkers. Nobody knew of any enemies he had. So when his body was discovered by fishermen on the banks of River Audra in the early morning hours in December of 2000, they were really shocked that he was found the way he was. He had already been missing for more than a month at this point. And when the police arrived, his corpse was like badly tortured. It was bloated because he was in the water for so long. But they did see that he had multiple bruises on the face. He had stab wounds. And the pathologist later would report that he had to have been without food for at least 3 days, because when they found his body, his stomach was empty and his intestines were completely empty of food. It was also, so he was kept for a few days and was tortured horribly. And they also found water in his lungs. So that means he was alive when he was placed in the water. And like the movie, that way of tying someone up, it's like around the ankles and the wrists. And then the rope is like a noose around the neck. So if you are to wiggle at any point, it pulls, like if you move your legs, then it tightens around your wrist, which pulls tighter around your neck. So he could have strangled himself if he moved his legs too much. Like it would have just snapped back and it could have broken his neck.
Yeah.
So he had been found with one piece of rope there, and there was like no clues at the scene. Nobody had seen anything like this. Like it was very strange in Poland, especially in this area. They were thinking at first that it was like a gang crime or like a mafia crime because of the brutality of it. But the way that he was stabbed so many times, they were like, somebody really hated this guy. But when they were investigating, he was like super loved. So they're like, okay, this is strange.
I have something to interject. They actually say in the movie, Christian's character does, he says, you know, that's how killers get caught, having a motive.
Ha. Yeah. And like it's in his book too, he mimics that way. I guess that thought of it being motiveless, but he's just so arrogant that he couldn't admit that he was jealous. And I think that's what it boils down to for Bala. So Januski's body was so deteriorated and horribly tortured. His widow refused to identify the body. So Januski's mother had to go to the morgue and identify his body, but the only way they found it was a birthmark on his chest. That's the only way she identified him. And they say it in the movie, that is accurate. And that's how they identified him. And that is also in the book as well. Although the book in real life, it's a female that gets murdered, not a male.
It's the book in... It's a female that gets murdered in the book and the film as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very similar. And he doesn't cut off his, he never cut off his breast. He did stab him in the side. So after this, they were questioning everybody. It was a pretty big case at this time already because it was just such a mystery. And the media dubbed it the perfect crime. And it was around, I guess, May of 2001. They completely abandoned the case. So it happened December 2000. By May, they were like, okay, we have no leads. We have nothing. And they actually showed this case several times on the crime TV show in Poland. It's like America's Most Wanted, but the Polish version, I guess.
Right.
It's called 997, like TV crime show 997, I think. They actually
is that what they dial to call the police then?
I believe so. I think that's what it is. And it's very popular over there. They kept airing it. Like they would just have a little blurb of it or like a whole show about this murder because there was no leads and he was a good guy. And they're like, we need to find the killer because this is one sadistic motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept, even 997 was getting comments about the murder, all the time, randomly. And it would usually be a man calling to report some, like, single bit of evidence to them. So it was still relevant, but the police had nothing to go on, so they shelved it. It wasn't until about a year later. So I guess almost 2 or 3 years after the crime, there was a break in the case. Someone had called anonymously and had left a tip. So the police officer that was Jacek in the movie, Robloski, he had picked up on this tip and was like, okay, well, maybe we should revisit this file, and sat down and looked at the files. And that's when they noticed that he always had his cell phone on him and he always had credit cards. So it definitely wasn't a robbery. And they didn't think it was a gang-related fight. He was like, no way. This is not a gang-related murder. This is like a definite murder with a purpose. So he started out looking for this phone. And he found that the phone had never been found or returned. But the victim's wife or widow, had kept the receipt to the phone, which led to, it's sort of like a VIN number for a phone. And if that phone is in use, that VIN number can be searched. So he actually looked up the VIN number and saw that the phone was in use still. So he's like, So he went back and found that this phone had been sold, like, I think four or five times. So he eventually traced it back to Bala. And he had to go through all these different people first, like to vet them and say, did they have anything to do with it? And he finally got to the last one, and it was Bala. And so he had questioned the guy that bought it from Bala, and the guy who originally bought it said that he had bought it on online for around 60 or 70 euros back then. It was like a Nokia.
Really, those were about that expensive back then, because I had to buy mine outright because my parents would not buy me a fucking cell phone.
Yeah, those things were indestructible too. So
they were.
Yeah. So they found that the phone was sold online, and it was sort of like the book that was also that the knife was sold online. So in reality, it was the phone that was sold. There was not a knife ever recovered. So he questioned Bala. Bala portrayed himself as a writer, and was just this intellectual man who had been traveling for years. Because it wasn't until about 3 years that he even got to speak with Bala. So he even went back on the phone call log and traced a call back from Bala's, like from the family, because apparently in Poland, they're like public telephones were recorded. So it recorded all the numbers that had been called, and they noticed on this telephone box that a bunch of Bala's friends, family, and colleagues were called around the same time that the victim's cell phone was called, which I thought was crazy. But yeah, he like looked up those IP numbers, connected it to Bala. That was actually circumstantial. So he started questioning Bala's family and friends. He didn't want to get them involved at first, but then when it started being more likely that Bala was the person, and he started questioning them as well, he learned about his blog. So he went on the blog and noticed that there were excerpts of Amok, the book. And there were very detailed descriptions of the murdering of the female in the book that matched the crime. And a lot of the details had never been released. So it was kind of strange that he had that kind of evidence or that kind of outlook at the crime. And it was just so mirrored that he was like, this is definitely Bala. So he went to Bala's parents' house, and he had found that Bala had left a bunch of stuff. It was like a year after the murder, he had moved out of the country, and he was traveling around Asia and the United States. So this was 5 years after the crime, because this whole detective work took a total like 3 years for them to actually find physical evidence that linked him to this guy. Because this whole time, Ball is like, no, never met him, don't know who he is. Meanwhile, friends are saying that Bala had threatened his ex-wife and all of her boyfriends. He like went off on her, said he was going to kill her and her boyfriends, because he was just like super jealous. So when the detective goes to Bala's parents' house, he actually found a notebook that detailed some information about the victim. And he also found a business card, and he found that pen, like in the movie. It says that the wife had it, but really it was the family. They just kept all of his belongings in a box. So they found a literal box of his trophies.
Yeah.
But like this whole time, like Bala, like his character, he's like a caricature of himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's very egotistical. And according to like court testimony from people that knew him, he was always like a confrontational dude. Even from being a small child until college, he seemed to rub people the wrong way and get into fights or arguments with people. And he did study philosophy in college, and he thought that he was like this super knowledgeable, superior guy, very egotistical.
He called himself an Ubermensch in the movie.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he probably called him an Ubermensch in real life, because he was, like you said, he's obsessed with Nietzsche. So he was called, he was said to have a legendary reputation, whatever the fuck that means. They said he had moments of being a really, really great guy, and then moments of being a super, super bad guy, which is the way of the narcissist.
Yeah, they're nice to you to get what they want, and then you see that they're total pricks.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he turns on you and manipulates you and lies. Like, everybody's description of him was like, he's a fucking liar. He is a liar. So even people that knew him his whole life testified to this, him being a liar, him being like this way more important person than he really is.
Self-important.
Yes, self-important, I mean. he actually went to college and like was this party guy for a little while. And then he married his childhood sweetheart, Stasha, at 23. And she had dropped out of high school and was a secretary at some company. And shortly after that, they actually had a son. And then after that, Bala and her started fighting all the time. He was having affairs with a lot of women. But he was super jealous of her. Like, if she left the apartment with her son or without her son or whatever, he would just like blow up at her. Like, he just thought that women should just stay home and take care of kids. Meanwhile, he can go out drinking and getting drunk and having these affairs with all these women.
Male chauvinist pig.
Yes. Yes, he definitely was. He was super, like, anti-woman. And, I mean, the book, like, I can't read it, you know. It's in Polish. It never got translated into English.
Yeah, I have a PDF of it.
In English?
No, in
Polish. Oh, yeah, in Polish. Yeah, it was supposed to be published in English, just because the amounts of people who were buying it once this blew up on TV that he was a possible suspect. Like, it increased to like tenfold. Like, it was a best-selling novel for a while, which is crazy.
Well, I mean, you know, like, his intention in the movie, it worked, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll get to this later, like, what I really think, but yeah. Like, did he want to get caught or not? I don't know. But after the child, I think the kid was like 5 or 6 or something. He started a business. It was like a professional cleaning company. And he was like really into this company, but he never really was good at anything. Like, he thought he was this like God's given gift to the earth. And he just wanted this image of being an intellectual businessman who's, like, read up in the arts.
He's such a wannabe.
I know. Yes, it's so frustrating. I'm like, dude, you're fucking loser. Loser, you're dick. So that business failed. And then his wife filed for divorce in 1999. And then
you can blame her.
Yeah. And then the summer of their split, she was having an affair. I wouldn't say an affair. She's not having an affair. She was banging a married man, which ended up being the victim. So there are mixed reports, but in the court files, it says she had a brief affair with this guy.
Well, so motive.
Yeah, so there's motive right there. So he ended up following her to a bar and threatened to kill her and quote her men or her boys, I can't remember. And then he found out,
you know what, that sounds more like what they do with the detective's character in the film.
Yeah that's why it like drove the movie, I guess, like with these. Mm-hmm. So he had threatened her in front of people, and one person came forward to say, yeah, I'm like best friends with his ex-wife, and one night at the bar Bala came up to me and was asking me about the victim, and he was asking him where he lived, like who his friends were, where he worked, and apparently this woman just told him everything and just described everything about him. I guess she didn't think he was being like, you know, like he was gonna kill him. She thought that he just wanted to know who his ex-wife was with. So she ended up giving him very detailed in information, and she actually worked with the prosecution on this too. So all these clues started coming together. A lot of them were just circumstantial, but the physical evidence of him having the pin, the business card, everything else, and his holding like that pretty much was like, hey man, you did it. Another person said that a few weeks after the victim's death and it being all over TV, he was drunk with some friends and he had screamed out that he had already killed one of his ex-wife's lovers with a rope and then bragged about it and kept talking about it. And somebody said, yeah, he said he killed him with a rope or a tie cord. I can't remember. And he testified on stand about it too. It wasn't until September 2007 that he was found guilty. He had petitioned for a retrial. I believe they tried it again and he was found guilty again. So the courts upheld his 25 years in jail. And Bala still gives interviews and still says he's working on another book. And he continues to mock the detectives, the investigation, the courts. But a lot of people are like, dude, he fucked up. Like the police didn't, he did. So
yeah, dude, you're the one in jail, bruh.
Yeah, he told on an interview that the detectives were brainless jellyfish. And the detective on one of the interviews said he likes to play himself a victim of an oppressive police force.
Mm-hmm. He's a drama queen.
He is a drama queen.
According to him, he's a drama queen who got caught by brainless jellyfish. So,
and it's so stupid because like his blog, like his book wasn't being sold at all. But he just kept putting like updates on his blog while he was traveling about like excerpts like buy the book and you can get this. And according to everything I read, it's just like hardcore pornography and like sexual sadism is the whole book.
Yeah, absolutely.
And another thing that got him caught, that crime TV show, 997. The detectives were alerted that, hey, we've had these comments about this murder for a while now. So we have the IP numbers of these emails and stuff. So they ended up tracing the IP numbers and all the IP addresses lined up with where Bala was traveling around the world right after he had moved. So he had traveled around Asia. He lived in Australia, did scuba diving, and he moved to the United States. And each one popped up. Every time he moved in a new place, he would message the crime show 997 to keep it fucking relevant. And he gave himself away several times. Like,
he wanted to get credit for it at some point.
Yeah, like I think it could have been like the perfect murder if he could have gotten away with it.
If he didn't brag about it to other people and write a fucking novel that mentions things similar to it and call in tips to the... He gave them everything they fucking needed.
Yeah, and like a lot of that was circumstantial, but like all of it. Yeah. I will say, back to him eating the paper in the interrogation room.
Mm-hmm.
So he really did confess to the crime and say, yes, I did it. I killed him. I'm guilty. Now take me in. So they're like, fuck yeah, we finally got this guy. This is crazy. And this is only like 2 years in the investigation, which ended up being like 5 years long. Mm-hmm. So he confessed and they brought him into the confession room because they didn't have him on recording. But they had multiple witnesses of him saying, yes, I did it. He ended up saying, yes, I did it. When they got him into the room, they got out the papers for him to sign and like him to write out in his words what happened. They said he started like shaking. He started like tapping the pen erratically on the desk and like moving around and staring in the corners and like looked like a wild animal. And he kept picking up the phone and mouthing things. And they were like, what the fuck? And he's like, I need an ambulance. So they actually called the ambulance. I think they took him to the hospital or they just checked him out in the ambulance, but they determined like, hey, this isn't a medical emergency. There's no reason why you can't finish this, interrogation. So they put him back in the room and then he's like, bitches, I lawyer up. Yeah. So he just kept fucking with people like the whole time, even though he had like admitted to it to several people. Oh God, he was just such a dick. Like,
yeah,
he fucked himself. He still doesn't admit to it. He still says he's an innocent man. He's just a great writer. He was upset that he wasn't allowed to reference his book in court. Like, yeah, so the judge was like, no, the book's irrelevant because we can't use it as evidence and like stop referencing your book. And he like got visibly upset in the courtroom, like super pissed, like that he wasn't able to like point out an excerpt in the book. And the police actually
greatest Polish novel.
Yeah.
I'll have you know.
Yeah, and the detective, he did go off of the blog, but he also went off of, like, evidence. I mean, the blog did give him a lot of clues, but really didn't solve the case. It's really, I think he did a really good job of detective work, like, finding out the IP addresses and all that, like, the phone. It took a little bit. But every time he'd present his case or like evidence, they're like, it's not enough. So he kept having to go back and get more evidence. And I think it was just him and like two other people in this case, I believe. Those are the only three people.
Determination.
Yeah. and like he really did have that goat skull on the wall. And that was his, and he did have, like, a shitty little room to do his detective work, and he kept that skull on the wall, and he said it reminded him of a hunter catching prey, because he was the hunter.
I saw that interview.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a couple of interviews. Some of them were in Polish. I just, like, watch just to get like body language from people.
Mm-hmm.
And Paulo is just like always arrogant little fuck. He's just he looks like a mouse.
He does. He's very mousy.
Yeah, he's very mousy. Yeah.
Movie star version him was slightly more attractive, but also
Weirdly attractive. Yes. I mean, I will say, I think the weirdly attractive man was the cop that had all those issues. I'm like, boy, I like your baggage.
I know, right? like dangerous, sexy. I saw a picture of him when he's younger, and he cleans up nicely.
Yeah, I was like, dang, because I was looking at at him too. I was like, dang, he's kind of cute in a weird way.
He's like big, piercing blue eyes, blonde hair. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that lady who's the Christian Bale's ex-wife in the movie, she's like, I like older men. I'm like, me too, lady. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, I mean, Andrew.
I mean, we all know how I feel about James Spader.
Oh, yes. I was about to say James Spader. but did he tip his fedora to you? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Give it to me, Red.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so I found, like, whenever I was doing research for this case, there was another one sort of like it. It was a Chinese man. Did you read that? It's called The Guilty Secret?
No, I did not read that.
So I think we should cover this, but I don't know if there's a movie about it right now.
Well, that's kind of the key thing there.
I know, but there's like two books on it. I don't know if there may be a movie. I haven't Googled it.
Well, I mean, we could maybe do a Patreon episode or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because this Chinese writer, Lu Yangbao, he had written this book called The Guilty Secret.
And oh my god, okay, I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he write. It's like a female author who, she's like a writer, and she had killed a bunch of people and like never got caught, and it ended up that the writer of the book wrote his crimes too. The same thing.
Okay, send me links to that, and we'll talk about it more off the pod.
Yeah, so that reminded me of that and the Dexter catfish killer.
Yeah, and someone else that we're definitely going to cover as well. Okay, so I think that about wraps up that portion, huh? So, Mo, what have you been doing in your free time?
I've been crafting.
Oh.
Yeah, I've been crafting. I'm watching that the hot cherry
brand new cherry flavor.
Yeah, brand new cherry flavor. It's really good. No spoilers, please, cuz I'm still only on like episode 3 or 4.
Don't worry. I finished it and I pledge not to talk about it until you are done.
It's so good. But I've been crafting. I finally broke out a bunch of stuff that I've been collecting over the years. I had this like giant craft box, and I literally pick up like washers and shit on the ground all the time, and I put them in jars. So I broke out all my jars of like broken jewelry and stuff, and I made a really cool fairy door with like moss and popsicle sticks, and it was really fun.
It's cute. I've seen it.
Yeah,
I like it.
I burnt myself so much with that fucking glue gun. Oh my god.
Oh no.
I burned my fingers.
I have a scar from hot glue somewhere.
Oh dang. No, mine wasn't that bad. But yeah. Hot glue gun hot people.
Yeah.
So
what
have you been up to?
I've been up to a few different things since we last recorded.
It's getting ready for spooky time.
What?
Getting ready for spooky time? Spooky season?
You know me. I'm spooky year round. Yeah. I literally watch horror movies year round all the time, almost every day. It is how I relax. I'm a weirdo. I also fall asleep to true crime podcasts. It's just how I am. So, yeah, it's always spooky time for me. But, no, I've been playing video games, as I always do. I finished Myst. So that was fun. I think that's the first time I've actually ever beat Myst. Because I don't think I did as a kid at all.
Yeah, I didn't.
Well, it was cool. It's actually really short once you know how to solve the puzzles.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I felt smart.
you are smart.
Thank you. I try to be humble, though.
yeah, not like Bala over here.
Yeah, I'm no Christian Bala. but no, I've been playing Grounded a lot. I got really into Grounded. If you don't know what Grounded is, it is basically open world survival craft in the setting of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. You're like a tiny little teenager and you're in a backyard and, you know, everything is terrifying because you're tiny.
Oh, that's cool. It's like a giant ant you can ride.
You can't ride the ants. They're not like you're not that tiny. You're like around the same size as an ant, I guess. You kill like weevils and shit to eat.
Can you like bounce on mushrooms?
You can't bounce on mushrooms, but you can build with mushrooms and you can
That's so cool.
You can make like mushroom bricks.
Oh, you said you can eat them?
Yeah, you can eat them too.
Is psilocybin in the game?
No, no. it's family
just a kid
friendly.
Just starts tripping face.
No, it's family friendly. The scariest thing in the game is there are wolf spiders.
Ugh.
And orb weavers, and they screech like a cat when they see you, and it's fucking terrifying, and they're huge compared to you, and they kill you in, like, 2 hits if you don't have, like, super upgraded armor and shit.
So it's like a giant in Skyrim.
Yeah!
Just fling you across the world.
Well, it has better mechanics than that.
Okay.
They actually had the option to keep that, but people kind of liked it, so they kept that glitch in. Bethesda did.
It's so fucking great.
I know. But yeah, so it's a fun game. Because the night is dark and full of terrors, and I am faint of heart when I'm in a video game. Like, I love being scared in video games because it's way more heart-pounding than watching a horror film. And let's face it, I'm dead inside at this point.
I'm dead at this point.
Well, you know,
I feel you.
Yeah, I'm very numb to all the things I've seen.
Are you comfortably numb?
I am always comfortably numb. All the time. I made a tower, not a tower, I made a road in the sky basically so that I don't have to risk running for my life from a wolf spider every now and
then. So you built a ladder to heaven?
kind of. It's not that high. but yeah, it's like a skyway that I can travel across the map to, like, POIs that are important without having to be on guard all the time.
What are caterpillars like?
There aren't caterpillars. There are grubs.
Oh.
You have to, like, dig them up, and sometimes they're a larva, and the larva attack. The grubs don't.
Huh.
Then you just have a shovel in your hand.
So you
quickly switch to something outside of the shovel.
You have weapons?
Yeah, you can make weapons out of things. If you kill, like, and there's levels of weapons, too. So, like, you can make one out of pebbles, and that's, like, your base level one. And you make, like, a hammer and an axe, and you can chop grass and build. And then you can, after you kill, like, a spider and, you know, some, like, bombardier beetles and stink bugs, you can make upgraded weapons that are stronger and kill things faster. And then things aren't scary anymore. And then
you don't come across a cat.
Oh, no. See, there's nothing that big. There's a crow that flies around.
Ooh, love crows.
Yeah, but he doesn't really, like, interact with you.
Oh, okay.
There's a giant koi fish that can kill you and the pond. But yeah, no, it's fun. I'm just building a lot because I use that as a relaxing thing in between moments of sheer terror. it's a great time. I'm really enjoying it. It's available on Xbox Game Pass if you have an Xbox.
I do. Andrew does. My Xbox is, like, Xbox One.
No, I mean, mine is too. Mine's an Xbox One S.
Oh, no, mine's not an S. It's just Xbox One.
I have a newer model than that, but not. I don't have the brand new one that's like still sold out everywhere.
Yeah, no, we don't have that either.
I don't think anyone does.
Unless you
really do, but
Bezos.
Jeffrey Bezos. Don't sneak over him.
Yeah, don't. Please don't. We can't afford it.
We love you though. Yeah, so I also finished brand new Cherry Flavor, and what else have I watched? I've really only watched movies for the podcast. I watched the movie that we're doing next week, which is Frenzy.
Oh yeah, I still need to watch that.
It's pretty good. It's a little slow at first, but then it kind of hits the ground running and snowballs. I didn't think I was going to like it as much as I ended up kind of liking it.
I swear I've seen that movie. The Hitchcock movie. Yeah. I think I've seen it.
Well, a rewatch would still be good.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just in case.
I have to watch it.
I know. Yeah, what else did I do? Oh, the other big thing I was going to talk about. I have been following two big cases in the news like a hawk.
Like
I think everyone in America is, honestly. At least if you're a true crime fan, you've been following this probably.
Yeah.
And that is the Gabby Petito case and the Murdoch murders in South Carolina.
Yeah.
So Gabby Petito, I just found this out while we were on break. So they found her body.
Well, they found a body, right?
They found a body that is consistent with her description, which is very specific because she has tattoos.
Yeah, yeah.
So they pretty much found her body.
Allegedly.
Well, it came from... Allegedly. It's not confirmed, but it's been reported by reputable news sources.
Not going to be like the Boston bomber case.
No, we're not going to declare that she's definitely dead, but they did find a body that looks remarkably like her.
Yeah.
It's likely that she has passed.
It's very probable that it's her body.
Yeah, it's highly probable that it's her body.
This is sad.
It's super sad. I think the boyfriend did it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the family came out and was like, he is not missing. He is on the run. Please stop saying he's missing.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. And the Murdoch murders are wild. So it's this prominent lawyer. Basically, he resigned from his law firm because he had been embezzling money. And then in June, his wife and son were murdered. And now he survived a gunshot wound. And they thought that someone was trying to kill him. But it turns out he hired a man to kill him because he thought that if he killed himself, his son wouldn't get the insurance payout.
That's crazy.
This guy is such a hot mess.
Yeah. And
there's apparently other murders that have been, like, covered up by his family. There's a great podcast if you want to listen, like, more about this. It's called the Murdoch Murders Podcast. Check it out. It's great. Because I cannot do it justice because there's so many wild details to this case.
Yeah, yes, it's all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Both stories are really wild, I feel like. So that's really all I've been up to. So I guess we're going to, like I just said a minute ago, we are doing Frenzy with, my friend Allie, next week. I don't know how she wants to, be presented to the world. I don't know if she wants to say her last name or not, so I'm just going to call her Allie for now. So Allie, we're going to cover Frenzy with Allie next time, guys. And that is versus John Christie, the depraved killer of 10 Rillington Place.
Yes.
So join us for that next time. You have anything to add, Mo?
Stay spooky.
Sure.
Yeah. That's all.
Yeah. Keep spooky. Keep those creepy vibes, man.
Yeah. Just creep it up. Just
creep. Do the creep.
Yeah, do the creep or the what's the shit the director oh my god. He says, look down, close your eyes now, like tilt your head down, look up at the camera. What is that? The stare.
Oh, damn. I can't remember.
I'll remember it later. Yeah. Listeners, you know what I'm talking about. Just do creepy stares at people, okay?
Yeah, what's his name in Psycho?
Yeah!
Norman Bates!
Norman Bates! Do the Norman Bates.
Do the Norman Bates.
Just don't kill your mom and dress in her clothes and then kill random women at your hotel, though.
Yeah, you can dress in your clothes, but don't kill random women at your hotel.
Yeah, and don't kill your mom.
No.
She made you.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Unless your mom tries to kill you and it's absolutely self-defense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the only time.
Yeah. Or she's like, or you're in one of those countries where assisted suicide is legal and she's like.
Terminally ill.
Terminally ill. Yeah.
Yeah. But it wouldn't be murder.
Well, I know. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Don't kill your mom. Bye, guys.
So, bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.